There's nothing quite as calming as hearing in back-to-back phrases, or back-to-back about 5 seconds, is 35 seconds, and then another one that says, which one's audio and which one is video?
Yeah.
That's probably
do you think he knows that we're on live?
Comforting things to hear. I don't think so.
I don't think he knows.
I think let's play this game where we look at Jacoby and see if he knows that we are on. And no, Elle is not whispering. She just doesn't have one of those things she's required to do television and radio, which is a voice. This is going to be amazing. I love this.
I'm just impersonating the Yin Yang twins.
Oh, man. You actually sound pretty good when you just get up close to the microphone. Maybe this could be a new thing for you.
Oh, yeah. Quiet Storm. Okay.
I'm going to say that is not a good thing for Jacoby, is the really extreme close-up is probably not great for his career. I don't even think that's the correct camera angle for him, right? Normally it's supposed to be facing him. I don't think we're supposed to get gray curtains in the background. But you know what, Elle? Let's go ahead and do this. Let's see what happens if we can do 3/4 of a television or a streaming show and not have the other quarter really involved. But also, they also have to take care of things while being quiet. So, while you fix everything. Hey!
I can't hear anything.
There's David Jacoby.
No. No. This is why God that is didn't want me to have a voice today. He didn't want me to troll Jacoby like I've been trolling these Bama fans. I can't have nice things.
Elle, if you want me to explain it, just feel free. But if you want to explain quickly how or where or why you lost your voice.
Well, I went to the national championship. I screamed the whole time for Georgia. There was probably a few F-Bamas in there as well, although there weren't a ton of Bama fans. I then went and didn't sleep, flew back from Indianapolis in the morning, and worked all day. So I woke up this morning, and my voice was even worse than it was yesterday, guys.
Here's the deal. Taking the L.
I do have a whiteboard today, so you could call me. We have our Alabaster King. You can call me the Melanated Queen.
This chrome setting
today only.
You can hear it through. You're supposed to hear the audio.
Giving my takes on a whiteboard, probably.
Okay.
This is such a joy.
We also have a fourth guest who we don't know, the masked man in the corner. But we're going to go ahead and start with the first topic because you know, time doesn't wait for anybody.
All right, guys, and. You know, Jacoby would really be great on this one, too. But our first topic, after last night's performance, are you with Ja Morant when he says the Grizzlies are one of the best teams in the NBA?
A little background, we were going to start with the Giants and Joe Judge, but thought maybe this is more interesting. And yeah, I would say Ja Morant, probably the greatest athlete in sports right now, is a little bit more interesting. And so while we wait for Jacoby a little bit, I will address those who think that we don't talk about the Chicago Bulls enough, even though they're the top team in the Eastern Conference. Listen, I was all ready to talk about the Bulls when they won 9 in a row, but then they pooped the bed to the Mavericks over the weekend, and now all of a sudden, not quite as interesting. And if you want me to break down the Bulls real quick, look, I don't think they rebound the ball well enough. I don't think they protect the paint well enough to be an elite team, so they're probably going to be a second round out. Okay? Cool. Now we move on to the Grizzlies, who last night beat the Warriors, and it was a Warriors team without Draymond Green, which means a lot, especially when you're a Grizzlies team that has been doing this largely with off. I feel like I'm in Radio Row at the Super Bowl, and there's just ambient noise.
You're trying to give your take, but there's so much noise. It's like when your producer's talking to you during your breaking news, and you're like, please shut up. I know you have to give direction, but I'm hearing you.
Yeah. So anyway, they were without Draymond Green. The Grizzlies were without Dylan Brooks. But without Draymond Green to really blow up an offense when, you know, it's a Grizzlies team that's doing this with offense largely, right? They're kind of maybe middle of the pack, top third of defense. But frankly, and with offense is what they're doing this with. And that's with guys on the floor who are always feeling live, guys who are feeling like they're a threat, even though you maybe have never heard of them. And so I think you look at sort of the totality of everything they've done so far and who they've beaten, how they've done it, who they've beaten without Ja Morant in the lineup. And I'd say, yeah, they are one of the best teams in the league. I'd say there probably isn't a team in the Western Conference that they fear. Again, I don't know what this game looks like with Draymond Green. But wait a second. Do we have a third participant here?
Is he here?
I'm sorry, more like a second and a half because L's only half there. Hello.
I am here. I believe you can hear me and see me. I apologize for that. It's 100% my
fault. Right on time.
But a couple things. Number one, I'm very excited to be working with an L. Duncan without a voice, because I feel like L. Duncan is like mainly voice. You know what I mean? I feel like that's like 90% of like your vibe is your voice and the things you say and the way that you say them. So this is going to be a real flu game for you, and I look forward to it. But the Grizzlies, everyone just talks about Ja Morant. That's all anybody talks
Step
about.
Step right in there.
And if you saw the game last night, Tyus Jones is contributing. And if you've seen his entire season, Desmond Bane is contributing, and Jaren Jackson has been healthy, and he wasn't healthy last year, and he still made the playoffs. Clark had a great game last night. Like, they just don't have, like, this is going to sound weird, but, like, household name role players, but they've got role players that will be household names in 2 or 3 years. Another thing I want to give props to is Taylor Jenkins, who is a Caucasian man. Taylor Jenkins. That is not a Caucasian name. When I heard the name Taylor Jenkins,
I was wondering when we were going to talk about this. It was going to happen eventually. I didn't think you were the one who was going to bring this up.
I assumed when I heard that he was hired, when I saw his picture, because I was like, oh, yeah. Taylor Jenkins, oh, he got hired.
A bit of a shocker.
I saw his picture. It was not what I expected. And, you know, I really respect that and everything that the Grizzlies have done, especially what they did last night. And
he also wasn't there last night, right?
I went to high school with a white girl named LaWanda. Story.
That's not
true. I swear to God, as she explained it to me, LaWanda was like a very Southern name back in the day. Like, apparently there's like a long line of other LaWandas.
Southern Chicago?
She's very white.
Southern Los Angeles?
She's very Southern, and her name was LaWanda. I'm telling you, she was a white girl, and like super white, like a white girl. As it pertains to the Grizzlies, Izzy, you mentioned the defensive part of this. They actually, since December 1st, have the best defensive rating in the NBA. And more importantly, can you read this?
Beat Nets, Cavs, Lakers, Suns, and LaWanda on the road.
Exactly. What more do you need, right? Like, if you want to be the best, you got to beat the best. They're beating them all.
Questions. What was LaWanda's last name?
Oh, I don't remember, because it was her sister I was friends with, and they had different parents. And the sister's name was Amanda. And she had a sister named LaWanda. That was her name. Also, Amanda was white. Yeah, Amanda Knupp.
So clearly,
totally derailed here.
L and our producers have seen the same Kurt Goldsberry tweet that I've seen, and I've got it in front of me. Since December 1st, which again, we're just picking a random date, whatever, shout out Kurt Goldsberry. Number one in record, net rating, defensive rating, rebound percentage, offensive rebound percentage, fast break, paint points per game, second chance points per game, opposing second chance points per game, opponent's turnover percentage, and points off of turnovers.
It's a mouthful.
That's a lot of effort, and it showed last night.
Since December1st.com. Look, I think the one thing that I would be concerned with the Grizzlies is, because, like you mentioned, Jacoby, it's like, it's not just household names that they don't have. It's people, you know, guys who have necessarily done it before. They're younger guys. And so, will they be able to do that over a 7-game series? Will they have sort of the structure that you need to, you know, when those fast break points are available? And, you know, we hear this every year when it's a surprise team that hasn't, we haven't seen how they perform in a playoff setting. Will they be able to rein that in and really have an offense where the defense feels like they can't really stop them? And not necessarily a full court situation. I'm just talking about in a half court setting. And I just don't know if outside of Ja, unless he's deciding to be, you know, 15 free throw a game guy, you know, late in the season come the playoffs, I don't know if they have that necessarily to put fear in teams over a 7-game series. And I think that's the one concern. But frankly, you know, again, with these teams that we haven't seen make deep runs to the playoffs, we haven't seen how they're going to do it anyway. So it's not like we have that formula in the back of our head.
That was very articulate and very well put. And I think that I can translate it down to a sentence being like, they have one get me a bucket guy. And I think in playoffs, you need get me a bucket guys. Like they have one sort of like isolation, take you off the dribble. I'm going to get a bucket without the help of the team. And they've got a great team offense and even a better team defense. But in the playoffs, as we've all seen year after year, and we've heard analysts say this forever, everything slows down. Everything becomes half court. Everything becomes isolation. It becomes my star against your defender. and they seem to have one reliable get me a bucket guy. One and a half. I'll put Dylan Brooks.
Do you think we can change that though? Do you think we can change that thinking? Because as much as like I love the go get a bucket guy, I also it's part of the reason why I don't love, you know, the Bulls in the playoffs, because if it comes down to DeMar DeRozan just going one on one and getting a like I've seen that before in the playoffs and it doesn't really work out especially well. I think it's just more of a breakdown of defense guy. Like breakdown of defense, make the right choice, because these days everybody can shoot, it seems like, if they're on the floor, especially in a critical situation. So, and I think that's what Ja can do. I mean, if there's anything he can do, it's get anywhere on the floor, right? So if he can break down that defense and maybe all these other guys, because they've been trusted throughout a season where they could win, you know, 50, 55 games, maybe that is the formula in the playoffs. Hey, just trust me, continue to trust me, because I know you can break down the defense. I know that help's going to come. We got it from there.
But the producer clearly didn't see Elle drawing up her next point. Well, you know what I mean? Before the producer interjects, Elle has been working over there. Let's see the whiteboard.
Yeah. Well, it doesn't. I started realizing that I was writing like a serial killer at the time. So what I was going to write was, I love how petty Ja Morant is, and I think that tells me everything I need to know. Like in the intangible world, right? You guys are breaking down like who's the go bucket guy, who's doing this and who's doing that, and that's all well and good. But there's a certain amount of petty that you need, and for him to look at a little kid wearing a Warriors jersey and be like, F you little kid, I don't like you. I'm here for Ja Morant and for all of that. And that tells me everything I need to know.
That also happened last night.
Yeah, you can explain, Izzy, because I literally don't have the voice to.
Okay, but do you have thumbs? Because if you have thumbs, we would like you to tweet the link of the show. YouTube.
I'm
Kobe.
Way ahead of you.
Did you?
I'm the only one that did.
Alabaster over there, Fingers McGee, says it doesn't seem like you did.
I definitely did. I said I don't have a voice, but this should be interesting, and I've tweeted both of you, too. Wait a minute now.
Can we get Jacoby some help to tweet that, please?
I'm doing it right now, bro. I'm doing it right now.
Set this up by himself. This masked handler over there.
I so tweeted this already. At 12:28, miss me with that alabaster.
Sounds like this voice is slowly coming back to us. We should say things.
It's because I'm getting
angry.
It's because I'm getting angry.
Is that all it takes?
Yeah.
So if I hold up an Alabama helmet right now, your voice will be crystal clear.
100%.
All right, what do you got, Charlie?
Hand up. I was wrong, Al. You tweeted the show. Thank you for that. But I actually have a basketball question for you, Jacoby. You're talking about needing multiple bucket getters in the playoffs. Are we sure about that, given that the Bucks last year won the title and really had one bucket getter down the stretch? Why can't Ja Morant be that guy?
Okay, Alabaster, a couple things. The Bucks have a big three.
Wow, his head was fully sideways.
And if Chris Middleton is not a bucket getter, what is he then? What exactly is Chris Middleton if not a bucket getter? He's not a defender. He's not a playmaker.
He's Desmond Bane.
He's not
with better
a shooter.
PR.
And I would say that.
I actually disagree with that PR thing. Like, I think Chris Middleton got beat up until he held up a championship. Like, I think this year is a little freer, and now you can definitely see him as a bucket getter. But I think a lot of us are saying bucket getter in the fourth quarter of a finals. Let's see. And oh, there you go. Happened.
Well, the Grizzlies have Steven Adams, who's been one of my favorite players, who I consider a bucket getter, but more like buckets of fish, like during the off season. But what can you do? Bucket getter. I feel like he can carry lots of buckets of like very heavy concrete. You know,
he doesn't have big Momoa energy.
Yeah, if you needed someone to get you buckets, it's like literally I've got some buckets. I need you to get them for me. Yeah. Steven Adams would do that
for you.
Carry
them.
Yeah.
On the defensive side with the Grizzlies, like, and you mentioned Steven Adams, he didn't play. They did a great job, it seems like, on Steph and the Warriors. And I'm starting to wonder if, you know, Klay is going to feel like he needs to be that second bucket getter for them. Because, I mean, there was a couple of possessions late in last night's game where it's just like, all right, put the ball in Klay's hands and see what he can do. And I think that's more of a let's get Klay ready for the postseason and comfortable however we need to, rather than, you know, strategic stuff right now. But what did you think about the Grizzlies defensively, specifically against Steph and the Warriors?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned both Clay and the Grizzlies defense, because I really think that I'm a Draymond Green stan. Like, I will ride for Draymond Green no matter how many triple singles he puts up. And I think that the Warriors offense didn't look like the Warriors offense. Not the Grizzlies played good defense, and they'll get in passing lanes, and they kind of like they play more like higher pressure, like further away from the basket. They'll like deny passes, which is kind of like something people don't do in the NBA, and the Grizzlies will do that. They commit to that type of defense. But Draymond Green does so much for this Warriors team. We know he does defensively, but he does so much offensively that just doesn't end up in this traditional stat sheet. Like, when you watch...
It didn't feel like the release valves were there yesterday, the way Draymond creates when all that pressure...
Exactly, and all the turnovers. The Grizzlies had a ton of points off of turnovers. And when you watch, like, a run, we all work at ESPN, so we've all seen sort of, like, a good Steph 3 VOs. You know what I mean? We've all seen, like give me 20 seconds of Steph hitting threes. And, like, 50% of those threes are assisted by Draymond Green, or are screened by Draymond Green, or the first screen was Draymond Green, and then he ran around a second screen. What Draymond Green does for this offense is so important. I think that was really sort of manifested last night. Not to take anything away from the Grizzlies' defense, which is excellent, but like that's really what I took away from the lack of offense from Draymond Green and Steph Curry. Steph Curry had 27, 10, and 10. But if you didn't watch the game, you're like, amazing game by Steph Curry. But it's kind of a pedestrian 27, 10, and 10 from Steph last night.
I believe the artist has a completed picture here.
You got to work on your framing. Put it in front of your face.
Center that bad boy.
No, other way. There you go. Boom.
More other way. More annoying standard storyline starter.
Should we be concerned? Or who is getting snubbed in the MVP race? Both of those things currently on NBA.com. Don't we feel like this is the part of the year where we just say over and over and over again, should we be concerned? And I'm saying that because the Alabaster King put that the Warriors lost three of their last four, as if that matters in January and December. And then, of course, the other storyline being Jokic feels like he's being disrespected as an MVP. Good God. Thank you. So are we now at the point where this is going to be the prevailing thought in the NBA? And which one's the more annoying one?
Great question.
I think the thing that annoys me the most about the NBA is there's so many games and we still just talk about championships, you know, and who's going to win it when we're like, oh, an MVP, yeah. Like in mid-December, it's like, I don't really care about any of those things in mid-December. The teams are going to change, personnel is going to change, and frankly, you know, the MVP is not going to be decided until March or April. So I think they're all equally annoying, but I'm not concerned about the Warriors. I do think the Grizzlies are up there. And, you know, do I think that they're going to upgrade their roster? I think they're probably going to let it ride with what they've got. And I don't think they, you know, those guys, those no names that Jacoby was talking about, don't have enough value outside of Memphis right now for them to get, you know, a ton of value back. So I do think that they're going to stay put and look like that surprise team. But
More importantly, guys, will LeBron ever win another title? Okay, I'm done.
Yeah, I mean, it's the title talk and the MVP talk, sort of like the two big shiny awards. We put them in front of the sort of the bunny in front of the racing dogs in like November. Like at Thanksgiving, we're like, who's ahead in the MVP race? If you remember literally 365 days ago, it was like LeBron number one, Joel Embiid number two. And I think neither finished like in the top five, to be honest with you.
Well, nobody, the first person who gets mentioned in the MVP race every year, you can pretty much bet everything you've got that person's not going to win it, because it just never ends. I remember one year, like, Elton Brand in, like, November was being hyped up for an MVP. I was like, well, he's definitely not winning it. But that's just where we go. That's where we go. Yeah. And Jokic,
I'm pretty
I think,
sure
is going to get insulted
at some point
a
last
later
year, for sure, we kicked around Julius Randle. For sure, some point last year,
every Halloween, Kyler Murray is the MVP of the NFL. Every Halloween. Every Halloween. It's Kyler Murray is the MVP. He's like, if the NFL season, instead of expanding to 18, went down to 4, Kyler Murray would have been the MVP for the last 3 years.
Hey, Jacoby, people, you probably couldn't hear us yet, but people tend to complain to me that we don't talk about the Chicago Bulls enough, even though they're number one in the East. So I would like you to tell me why you're not sold on the Chicago Bulls.
Oh, I made a mistake.
There's our Bulls coverage.
You know, sometimes when you're in this business, you have a take mistake. I made a take mistake. I was like, it was like 10 games in, I was like, the Chicago Bulls have played the easiest schedule in the NBA. This team is going to come back to earth. This team doesn't play defense. This roster isn't working. And then, like, here we are a few months later. And, like, sometimes you have to look right in the mirror and the camera and be like, I was 1,000% wrong about that. Like, 1,000% wrong. And I think that people talk about DeMar DeRozan and what he was signed for, and he was signed for a nice number. And at the time, people didn't love it, but it's like DeMar DeRozan has been doing great for them. But I like the Lonzo Ball. Lonzo Ball has really every single year in the league. I think one year he went down, but every year his shot has gotten better and better. And you remember like the coming out of college Lonzo Ball? I'm sorry, it was like, oh yeah, like this. Mm-hmm. It was like coming out of college Lonzo Ball couldn't shoot. And one of the questions we had about the Bulls was who plays defense for them. DeMar DeRozan is not a defender. You've got Vucevic, who's not a great defender. But what Caruso and Ball have done at the point of attack when people are bringing the ball over and trying to start up the offense has been amazing for them. And I was wrong about the Bulls. But, however, I wouldn't pick him in a series over the Nets. I wouldn't pick him in a series over the Bucks.
See?
I wouldn't.
All right, there's your Bulls coverage. Jacoby likes the Lonzo Ball. All right, what do we got next?
All right, guys. We are moving on to some NFL coaching carousel. And our question is, how desirable is the Giants coaching job?
It was interesting that it took the Giants to release Joe Judge an extra day. I don't know if they just want to lump him in with the other guys who got fired on Monday. But what I guess the framing point for this is what makes an NFL coaching job desirable? Because I don't think the city matters anymore, right? I don't think that's kind of a big deal. So it just matters about what young, potential, like ready-to-win talent. Maybe a GM that you can work with. The Giants don't have a GM currently. Gettleman just got the luxury of retiring. And what I'm assuming a quarterback, right? A quarterback's top of the list in terms of a job that's desirable. But outside of like a couple of, you know, miracle seasons from Eli Manning, who has kept the Giants, you know, afloat in terms of relevance, who had kept the Giants, I don't really see what could possibly be desirable about this. I mean, I guess the best thing is you're in your local area, you're competing with the Jets, who you'll probably do better than. I mean, that's probably the best thing that you can consider desirable here. But I don't really see much when you've got a running back, you know, a high pick of a running back who's in a position who's, you know, just not that valued. You've got a quarterback that nobody really trusts necessarily, although he seems to have, like, physically might still have the goods. I don't see it. Like, outside of a little bit of a history with Eli Manning and a couple of playoff runs, you know, they haven't really been relevant for, like, 20 years.
Oh, that's a hot take. I would say this tells me it's not a good job at all. Five straight seasons of at least 10 losses. 8 of 9 of those seasons, they haven't gone to the postseason. And to your point, they're bad everywhere. When you think about the other jobs that are open right now, the Broncos, it's kind of a turnkey job. You need a quarterback, but you've got all the pieces there. You got the defense there. You even got special teams, and you've got a fantastic running approach. Same thing in Chicago. At least you've got some things there, right? You had a defense, frankly, that single-handedly took you to the playoffs, made you a playoff team just a couple seasons ago, and you have a future in Justin Fields. Of course, he has the right tutelage. It's really about what's available, and when you look at the Giants, they're just an absolute mess, starting with the fact that they don't have a GM and ending with the fact that they don't have any talent on the actual field. It's bad on both sides of the ball, and it's just a huge reclamation project in a place where they don't take too kindly to patience. So, no, I don't think it's a good job at all. It's a good job in the grand scheme of having a job, but comparatively, it would not be first on my list.
No, and I think that this goes way outside of football and outside of sports and just in real life. When it comes to professional opportunity, you want the expectations. You want the bar to be as low as possible. That's really what you want. You want the bar to be as low as possible. You want to look at your boss, and this is in all aspects of life, and say, what do you consider success, right? And the Giants have had too much success as a franchise in those, as you mentioned, Eli Manning miraculous years. It's like the Giants fan base, the Giants organization, they sort of expect success, which is why I would like to go into a very low expectation situation that has a higher upside, like you mentioned, the Broncos and the Bears. And obviously, when we talk about the NFL, we always talk about quarterbacks. Like, it's like the quarterbacks and then everybody else is way down here. And I think that if you go into Chicago, it's hard to not outperform what Matt Nagy put on the field last year. And Justin Fields seemed to me in flashes to show some really good things. Trevor Lawrence showed us in week 18 all of a sudden that he can be a good quarterback in the NFL. So I would say the Giants is very low on my list. If I'm Brian Flores, who's going to get a head coaching job and deserves it, if I'm Brian Flores, like, I'm taking all the other meetings before I travel to New Jersey to take that one.
Well, you know, you mentioned Brian Flores, and it just makes me think of, like, the amount of things that have to go, that should have to go wrong, like, if you, to get fired. Like, that team winning record the last couple of years, and then here you hear, read all these leaks locally about, oh, you know, he didn't have a great relationship with the players, he didn't really respect the owner necessarily, was kind of rude sometimes, I guess. And it's just like, what is it that you really require of your head coach? Because, like, Joe Judge wasn't a great, like, public image guy for the Giants, and then on top of that didn't win. So it should have been, like, an automatic, okay, we're going to move on. But, like, do you have to win and be nice about it? Like, I don't really buy that necessarily. And the Giants, in their situation, like, you can only go up. And so I would go in there and just be like, look, things. If I'm Brian Flores, I'm thinking, look, if people think I'm a little hard around the edges, okay, I'm going to go into an organization that doesn't have a lot of expectations. It's been the worst team for 5 years and say, all right, well, let's change things up because obviously that stuff hasn't worked. So, I mean, I don't think there's any sort of formula either way. I think, you know, you've just got to get the right marriage. And given the fact that they don't have a GM and maybe they're bringing the GM and the coaching at the same time, maybe you can get that type of success and that type of chemistry there. But it's a lot of a crapshoot.
There is literally the enduring and indelible image from the Joe Judge era will be quarterback sneaking on 3rd and 9. What the hell is wrong with you?
No, after, I mean, like, sneaking on
that's
second
where we're
on
at.
The way out,
like,
the door, it gives you that,
you know,
gem.
We're at the point where, like, literally the coach just quit and everybody just quit, and you're watching a team that has completely quit, right? The pride of New York, and they have completely quit. It's not a great job. It's not. And to your point, Jacoby, you wouldn't think the Jacksonville job would be a good one either. But Shad Khan, I would say, is a little bit more loyal, and there is zero expectation to win there. So I think there's a little bit more room there to grow and get better. In Denver, like, there's going to be a lot of pressure on the next coach. I mean, this is not – I'm a Broncos fan. This is not okay. Like, not only are we not making the – we've had 5 losing seasons. That's not how Denver works. There's a lot of pressure there. There is, especially because there is some weapons there. And I would say they won't have as much pressure in Chicago, although we know that they will be. Right now, the Giants is the least desirable of all these jobs.
Do you guys feel good or bad when you guess properly when a coach is going to be a disaster? Like, when Joe Judge was hired and he had his opening press conference, like – pretty sure I was like, yeah, this isn't going to work. And then when it doesn't work, it's just like, man, how do we all see this? And you guys do not.
Nobody did it better than Adam Gase at his opening press conference. Also
we all
in
knew
New York. We all knew that. But it was like the Joe Judge thing. I was like, oh, he came from the Patriots. I was like, oh, so what was his role on the Patriots? Like, oh, the special teams coordinator. Like, oh, interesting. Oh, Bill Belichick, like, really, really, you know, stood vouched for. There's another word for vouched. He foisted his special team coordinator on the Giants franchise, which lost him 2 Super Bowls. This was just more brilliance, 4D chess, not checkers, from Bill Belichick, because he completely did this all himself.
And there's times like Nick Sirianni where we're just kind of wrong. He was like, okay, not too bad.
Yeah. So okay, they've also played no one.
I feel better
you
when
know
I'm
what,
right.
Enough. Eagles fans have been coming after me because I went after Nick Sirianni. You beat Gilbert Godfrey, and you beat freaking Trevor Siemian, and you beat Jake Fromm. Stop it. Also,
Gilbert
great run,
Godfrey.
But stop it. Stop it.
All right.
You are very advantageous, and you've taken advantage of your opportunities, but you haven't exactly been beating the world.
That's it.
All right, what else we got, Charlie?
All right, guys, it's time to play a game. And that game is Whodunit. We'll give you a quote. You guys have a minute to come together and tell us who done it.
Man,
first quote.
We got a clock now?
Oh, yeah, we got a clock.
Mm-hmm.
I'd like to go to law school, but for the next year, I'm going to play football. I've got a decent amount of years. Hopefully, I live until at least 80. So we'll say 60 years to not play football. I'm going to play football this year. We'll see where. And your choices are Kayvon Thibodeau, B, Aiden Hutchinson, C, Bryce Young, or D, Stetson Bennett.
What do we think about, like, limiting how long you're going to live till about 80? Like, I always tell people I'm going to live till about 120 because, I mean,
first,
you know, technology, medical advancements,
I Googled the,
et cetera.
The median life expectancy for U.S. male citizens. It's about 70.
86.
So let's say that's right.
Oh.
But the math still doesn't add up, right? Because if let's say this person is 20 and then he plays football for a year, that already pushes him past 80. So unless this person is 19 years old, the math doesn't add up. But I'm still going to go with Stetson Bennett because he was hammered on TV yesterday, so who knows what he's going to say. Of course, the
math he's older than 20, isn't he? He's past 20. I mean,
No, he's been in college for the last 7 years. We've all learned about the junior college, the transfer, the 17 years at Georgia.
Yeah.
The math says Bryce Young, but it doesn't really make, the quote doesn't make sense. Uh-uh.
No, and that's what I'm saying. Stetson Bennett would not say, "We'll see where," as if he doesn't, like,
right.
Like there's no intrigue here. Stetson Bennett's not getting drafted. Come on now, stop.
Oh, he's going to be in camp on a team. He might not get drafted, but he will be in camp on Hard Knocks getting cut in, like, the third
episode. All right, B is my final answer.
Lucky law school.
Dang it.
Oh, God.
You know, for the next year, I'm gonna play football. I've got a decent amount of years. Hopefully, I live till at least 80. So, you know, we'll say 60 years to not play football.
Oh my God, poor Stetson.
So, I'm gonna play football this next year. We'll see where.
All right, what stage was it? Was he in the sober stage, the tipsy stage, the drunk stage, or the hungover stage?
I know exactly where he is, but listen, as the only Caucasian here, there's a telltale sign. When you get the super pale face and the super red lip, that's always like a dehydration, went too hard last night. You'll see it on Jamin Jacoby from time to time from me. But I will say that was definitely...
Just to be clear, it's from you, the Caucasian, on Jalen Jacoby.
But I will say that was a... on camera, on live television, on a three-letter network, realizing that he was phasing from drunk to hangover. That's what he was doing, literally live on.
What I saw there, people were like, oh, he didn't sleep. I was like, no, I didn't sleep. I know what that is. That is, he passed out, didn't remember that he had to do this, and then, of course, someone within, like, the media communications for Georgia, like was knocking on his door and was like, we have everything set up, Stetson, you got to go now. He drank a little bit of water, and then they plopped him down. Like, he was still sort of asleep right then. I think he had absolutely been asleep already.
Yeah, so there's definitely phases to the hangover, too. Like, that seems like the phase of the hangover where you're just, like, you're just kind of in this weird place where there's not really a bunch of pain, but you just don't know what's real. You can kind of just yammer on, or you can just kind of sit there and stare. Like, I think that's where he was. It was kind of in that in-between place.
And there's only
and
two.
He was just, like, saying things.
There's only two directions to go in that state, I've heard. Go back to sleep or ride it out. Those are the only two decisions you can make. Go back to sleep or get three Bloody Marys. This day is going one of two ways, Stetson.
You think he regrets that? You think that these the morning after interviews are taken away from his, like, legacy of Georgia champion quarterback, L?
No, it helped Joe. Like, Joe Burrow was super drunk, too. He did the same thing. This is becoming a thing. Every year, the drunk quarterback goes on national television and says something drunk. Like, he's 23. It's probably more embarrassing if he's 19 years old, right? And he's not legally allowed to drink, and we all know he's been imbibing. But no, it's fun, good-natured. I think it's hilarious.
I do have a question, though, I want to ask you guys. I found, and again, I'm old, I'm a dad, I found the Victory cigars a little apropos, right? Is they come in a plastic wrapper. You know, you're a Florida guy, so you're cigar educated. They come in a plastic wrapper. No one's got a lighter. They're not going to allow you to smoke them. And smoking cigars is extremely overrated as a habit in the first place. I saw the Victory cigars, and I was just like, do we need those? Do we need the cigars?
It's what you do now.
I'm not a cigar guy, so picture. I don't really have much here. But can you say apropos again? I like how you say that.
Apropos? Did I say it wrong? Doesn't it end in an S?
It does. It ends in an S.
Yeah.
I thought you said it apropro. Anyway, what's the next game?
All right, we got one more quote here. This quote, Nikola Jokic is not sexy. He's just not. His wife might disagree. There's nothing sexy. There's nothing about Nikola that is sexy to people. And your choices are
That's got to be Stephen A.
Ty Lue, B. Jamal Murray, C. Michael Malone, or D. Stephen A.
And that's got to be Stephen A.
You think that's Stephen A, huh? I think it's a little too obvious. I think it might be either his own coach or his own teammate, Jamal Murray.
It has to be B or C, but I just want to say that I hard stop fully disagree with this. Mainly because we both look alike when we take our shirts off. So I'm just going to say, I'm sitting this one out. I disagree. Nikola Jokic is extremely sexy.
I will disagree with you. His passes are sexy. That's about it.
Fair.
There's not much else there.
So where do we go?
I'm sure
with
his wife will disagree. But I'm gonna go with Michael Malone. I'm gonna go with sassy Michael Malone.
I'm going Jamal Murray. It's got to be someone in the Nuggets organization.
Stephen A. Wow, we are all over the place. Ty Lue. If it's Ty Lue, then I think we should all walk off set.
And Nikola Jokic is not sexy. He's just not.
Yeah.
There's nothing about Nikola His wife might disagree. Nicole, that is sexy.
Nikola now, Jokic
Nikola's
looks
brothers
like,
might come after looks, his coach.
He looks like bizarro Dolph Lundgren. Like, Dolph Lundgren would have played Nikola Jokic in a movie because he'd be, like, a better-looking version of him. But there's 100% certainty that he is not sexy. And I know he was referring to the MVP thing. He's not sexy enough to garner all this attention. But I love that we took it completely physical, and now we're just ripping on Nikola Jokic for looking ugly.
I think Nicola's got a face that looks confused, but really is just playing the part. I think it goes back to that childhood photo of him where he definitely looked like he sold, like, glazed donuts or water bottles for, like, an upcharge in junior high, but would just, like, play it off, like, and just act dumb if he didn't know that that was not allowed. Does that make sense?
Wait, what's going on with this Jokic love fest? Why is everyone talking about how amazing he is? What's happening?
Because we don't have an MVP favorite. We just have, like, a dozen people that should be, that are disrespected by not being in the conversation. That's where we are in the NBA right now, and Nikola Jokic has been like the talk of the last 2 days.
Yeah, it's not about are you the MVP, it's are you in the conversation?
Yes.
Would I want my daughter to date you? What does that have to do with anything? So what?
Oh, well, Joel Embiid has had seven straight 30-point games, and LeBron's having one of the best seasons of their career, and Nikola Jokic is even better than his MVP. Like, who is the MVP? Like, who? This is all a bunch of straw men that we're arguing against. Guess what? There's about, I don't know, 50 games left to play, and something tells me that 49 games from now we'll have an idea who the MVP is. So that was Izzy's point earlier. We don't have to do this. But I do love this
that
quote.
That was Popeye Jones. Popeye Jones, his assistant coach, also famously not sexy, saying he's the type of guy that if I had a daughter, I'd want my daughter to bring Nikola Jokic home and say, hey, Dad, this is who I'm going to marry. I know she would be in good hands. I think any dad that did not play in the NBA would be absolutely frightened if Nikola Jokic shows up at your front door. Like, you, I mean, Popeye Jones is what, 6'7", 6'8"? That might not be the craziest thing. But if you've got a regular-sized dad, Nikola Jokic is not the guy you feel comfortable with.
As a girl dad, I will say this, is that what this is, I can translate this down, is he's got $200 million, okay? It's got nothing to do with his personality. It's got nothing to do what he looks like. It's got nothing to do with kind of his character, his ethics, his morals. It's like, if you got $200 million and I raised my daughter right, we can work this out. And I don't have to pay for the wedding. I don't know. You're not going to hit me up for a loan. Like, you can have multiple homes. Like, she's in good hands. I know what that means, Popeye. I know what that means.
Your daughter is not in good hands if you're just handing her off to whoever has money.
Depends how much.
That's debatable.
All right, we need another game.
Race debatable. All right, moving on to our next game. And that game is, what are the chances? Well, we'll give you a topic, sometimes with a clip, and you'll tell us the chances. First one, we got a clip here. What are the chances the refs should have let the Raptor stay where he was?
Oh, my God.
The Raptors in the Toronto, no fans.
I love this story.
It's good. Okay, now if you're Monty Williams here.
20,000 people screaming at you, totally fine. One mascot waving his arms.
Jumping up and
that's
down.
That's got to change. Look at the score, too. It's the
tennis thing,
down
isn't
distance.
It?
Look at this game situation that this is happening in. There's 6 seconds left in one possession game. First of all, he violated
hang on,
the line before the ball.
So I don't know if I necessarily buy this, but there is the whole, you know, tennis and golf argument that if everybody's yelling, hey, that doesn't really matter. But if one person's yelling and nobody else is, then hey, that is going to affect you. But I don't necessarily buy that here, because how many times do you guys see on the free throw line where these players think they're slick and they try to pop up just at the right time right before the guy's shooting?
Oh,
and
nobody
even says a word about that stuff, but you got a dude in the furry costume and all of a sudden you're upset.
I got to be honest with you. There was a 100% chance that the ref should have told Devin Booker, that's literally what the mascot is here to freaking do. I'm like, that's his job.
He's there to entertain the fans. If there's no fans, what is his gig?
Distract the other players, Jacoby. What the hell?
It's like, that wasn't
that's
even
the last year. You guys watched League Pass, right? They didn't have fans last year. And if you watch the commercials on League Pass, they don't go to the local commercials. They'll just show you the in-arena stuff. And they had, like, dance teams doing dances to no fans. I was like, what is this? Do they just need the paychecks? Like, what are we
And if you
watching?
Were in the arena, it was louder during those games than most games with fans, because they were constantly pumping that music in at 1,000% level. It was really annoying. But that wasn't even the funniest part with a mascot yesterday. There was a shot of the giant plastic inflatable mascot walking by on the sidelines during the game. And that in itself is just hilarious because there's no fans, just one he wasn't working necessarily. He was just going from one spot to the next. And you get a freeze frame of that. It just looks hilarious. I didn't even know they were doing this in Toronto at the moment.
I've been watching a lot of Jurassic Park with my 8-year-old son. And I just want to say that them hashing this out is a great moment for human-dinosaur relations. So I'm going to say that he should have 95% let him stay where he was, because I just feel like humans and dinosaurs really need to just like get along, because I've been watching a lot of Jurassic Park lately.
To quote from Jalen and Jacoby, it's such a soft move. I'm sorry. It's so soft. Like, it's funny if it's ironic, like which one of the Lopez brothers always fights with the mascots. Like, that's funny. Like, he has a whole storyline and it's hilarious. Devin Booker was like really upset that the mascot had the gall to stand there and jump up and down. Like, it's nuts.
I'm looking up Devin Booker's free throw percentage, because that's going to be my answer for the percentage. It is 87.1% chance that they should have let that go.
But it's also like down and distance. There's 6 seconds left in a one possession game. And if you're Devin Booker, like, you should really just be focusing on putting the ball in the basket.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
You know?
What do you got, Charlie?
The question I have for you guys is a two-parter. One, how shocked are you that that was Devin Booker and not Chris Paul complaining about the mascot? And then two, how proud was Chris Paul that he has taught Devin Booker so well to complain in that moment?
That's the part that I'm more impressed. Like, not he taught him well. He has just fed off of the Chris Paul energy for a year plus now. I mean, but that's kind of who Devin Booker has been. He's not like the most warm and fuzzy guy. It's just that we all haven't been in his business enough to recognize what kind of guy he is. He's a little ornery.
I would say that
I'm out on an island on that one.
You can't see it. No, you can't see it. But just out of the frame is Chris Paul is actually complaining about the mascot, but not having his jersey tucked in. That's what Chris Paul is doing. So Devin Booker is complaining about the hands up, but Chris Paul, just out of the frame, is complaining about the mascot's jersey not being tucked in and that he needs to go to the locker room.
And Scott Foster.
Scott Foster was in the mascot uniform. You don't know that. It's a side gig. We all have side hustles.
What's the next one?
All right, guys, last topic here. We got a soundbite for this one. What are the chances that you believe that Mike Tomlin slept through the end of the Chargers-Raiders game?
85. I missed the end of it. I dozed off. I knew I had a work day waiting on me, or I assumed that I had a work day waiting on me.
Anybody else not hearing that?
I think at one point Oakland was up by 15, and that number made you somewhat comfortable. I'm probably better off not having watched it. So it's probably not as exciting of a description as you would have hoped.
Isn't this all of us watching East Coast games and we have shows tomorrow? Like, listen, they were up by 25 in the third quarter. I was tired. I had 2 glasses of wine. Sorry I missed that comeback, y'all. I think
there's
85% chance he was asleep. I'm not saying there's 100% chance Ben Roethlisberger learned that he was in the playoffs like the next day, like over breakfast.
There is a 0% chance that when that game looked like it could potentially end in a tie, right, which would have eliminated his team, he was not made aware. Someone made that man aware. You need to be watching this game because it could actually impact your team. I do believe he dozed off. I do not believe he found out what happened when he looked at ESPN.com the next morning.
Now, see, dozing off is a tricky thing because it could be 5 minutes. It could be 5 hours. And so, there have been times where I've confidently closed my eyes during a commercial or during, you know, a slow music portion of a show where there's not a whole lot of conversation, thinking, oh, I'm okay. I'll definitely open back up as soon as I hear either some football or, you know, more dialogue. And next thing you know, it's 3 hours later and all the lights are off and, you know, I'm still on the couch. And so, yeah, I can totally believe that. And, you know, the older you get, the more you value, I think, sleep. I feel like it's trickier to come by the older you get. So maybe he tried to time a melatonin, you know, supplement at just the right time. And maybe it kicked in a little early because that game went a little long. So I totally believe it happened.
Melatonin.
I'd go 99% there.
Oh, look what you did to Alabaster.
I changed it up. It was the 1 second delay. Sorry, Charlie.
All right, guys.
I think
that's pretty much it.
That's a smooth transition to the end of the show. We never really know when we're done until Charlie says something like that. So,
can I just do the whisper song out the back of the show?
Yes. Yeah, absolutely.
Please.
Can we talk about Kodak? Wait, now's the time to talk about Kodak. Did you guys think there was Kodak in a hockey game yesterday?
Yes. What was he doing? What were they doing? You're going to get me to talk Florida Panthers if we have more of that going on in the stands.
No. End the countdown. We got to talk about Kodak. Let's talk about Kodak.
I mean, was it dry humping?
Hey, he's going back up.
No, did we just go reverse on the countdown for a second?
I got an hour and a half on Kodak. He started in the front and then moved up to the suite. Come on, Kodak.
They were just twerking, though. Just twerking.